I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Yes, plastics. And 50 years ago, the movie The Graduate put plastics on the map. But plastic is now all over the map, washing ashore and collecting in giant patches in all of the oceans. How do we go from career advice in 1968 to an environmental nightmare in 2018? We look at this man-made crisis from multiple angles. Hello, and welcome to Plugged In. I'm Greta Van Susteren. Today, we will hear from the plastics industry, an ocean conservation group, and the U.S. government on efforts to clean the oceans of plastic debris. How much plastic is in the oceans? Well, according to the University of Georgia researcher Jenna Jambach, between 5 and 14 million metric tons of plastic finds its way to the oceans each year just from coastal regions. And with more plastic being produced, more winds up in the seas. 322 million tons of plastic was produced in 2015, and Jambach and her colleagues estimate more than 8 trillion, that's trillion, metric tons of plastics have been produced to date. Just 9% of that 8 trillion tons has been recycled. While the numbers are so overwhelming, what can one person do? VOA's Steve Barragona tells about a campaign aimed at taking personal responsibility.
Nearly every drink comes with a plastic straw. But have you ever wondered where they all go?
A straw.
A straw.
Straws are among the most common items found in litter cleanups around the world. The nonprofit Ocean Conservancy has been holding cleanups like these for more than 30 years. Sarah Kohler is with the group's Trash Free Seas program.
And over the 30 years, volunteers have collected over 10 million plastic straws and stirrers off of beaches and waterways and coastlines around the world.
The group says the ocean is strewn with 150 million metric tons of plastic trash of all kinds, clogging coastlines, ensnaring wildlife, and even littering land far from any human settlement. And each year, another 8 million tons wash in. The problem is expanding rapidly in the fast-growing coastal nations of Southeast Asia, says Bridget Croke with the sustainable investment group Closed Loop Partners.
And it's, you know, for two primary reasons. One is that the infrastructure isn't there to get it somewhere else.
The systems to collect, sort, and recycle materials are lacking in much of the developing world. The other reason, she says, is the single-use plastic packaging that makes up much of the trash is basically worthless. Plastic bottles are the exception that proves the rule.
There are kind of informal economy of waste pickers that are collecting that because they find value in that material and they can sell that.
Closed Loop Partners is working with some major companies to make more packaging recyclable and improve recycling systems. But in the meantime, Kohler and the Ocean Conservancy have a suggestion. Skip the straw.
For most of us, we can drink our beverage without a straw just fine. So it just kind of seemed like a really nice item to target to reduce the number that are out in the waste stream and effectively reducing the number that can end up on the beach.
Or try an alternative, like reusable, washable metal straws. While skipping the straw will not solve the plastic pollution problem, Kohler says it's a way people can get started.
We get questions all the time asking about how, you know, how people can prevent marine debris in their everyday lives. Skipping the straw is kind of the first thing that we tell them. It is really that entry point.
They hope people will then start thinking about other ways they can use less plastic and help keep it out of the oceans. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
And VOA's environmental reporter Steve Barragona is with me. Steve, Starbucks recently announced it would eliminate plastic straws from its coffee stores by 2020, eliminating a billion plastic straws a year. Is that a proverbial drop in the ocean? What are the economics of recycling and recovery?
Yeah, it's a small step, but, you know, a lot of, as I said, the environmentalists say this is a way to get started. There are a lot of companies that are starting to take this seriously. Mars, Nestle, Mondelez have all pledged to make all of their packaging recyclable or compostable or reusable by 2025, but that's a ways off, and they haven't really committed anything, you know, any kind of hard steps to get there.
And I'm not going to put you on the spot about Starbucks, but it did strike me that they're going to eliminate it by 2020. We're in 2018. Why don't, if they're going to do it, why don't they just do it now? And, you know, what's wrong with paper straws? But I'm not going to put you on the spot to tell me that. They have to defend Starbucks on that. And I also don't want to pound a company that's trying to do the right thing. But are the policies changing in all these companies? companies?
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of a movement around the country to look at plastic and look at ways to use less of it. I mean, there are cities like San Francisco and Portland and New York City and here in Washington that are all kind of moving towards less plastic, finding ways to kind of get less plastic into the waste stream.
I take it plastic is cheap. I mean, cheaper than other packaging, and that's that's why everybody uses it.
It's a big issue. It's cheap. It's easy to manufacture. It's durable, which is its great virtue and its great problem.
As public opinions, as the public sees these pictures of the ocean and sees the tremendous amount of plastic that's in the ocean and other debris, is that putting pressure on these corporations? Is that to protect their brands?
Yeah, I spoke to somebody who said that basically when you see a Nestle wrapper wash up on the beach, there's no doubt where that came from. And if you're a company that, you know, that is easily identified like that, it's a reputational risk.
Steve, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, there's a governmental program responsible for preventing, reducing, and removing plastics and other debris from the ocean. I spoke to Mark Dix, who is the acting director for NOAA's Marine Debris Program.
NOAA is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We're one of the science agencies in the United States government.
What's the sort of overall job of NOAA?
Well, we're here to study the ocean and the atmosphere and to not only know its science, but be able to use its science in the United States.
What is that?
That is science on a sphere, and it contains a number of different data sets which help to show in a visual representation data and information that has been collected from all over the globe.
What is the North Pacific Gyre, which I call the garbage patch, and I think a lot of other people do?
Well, the garbage patch is actually a gyre, as you've identified, and that gyre is a circular current on the ocean that basically entrains solid material. Now, it's actually not correct to be thinking of it as some sort of giant raft of debris or material, because that material that's out there is actually widely dispersed. You can find increased concentrations of debris out in that gyre, but it's a very large space.
Now, I've heard that the one in the Pacific is the size of the three times the size of France. Is it that big?
It's fairly substantial in size, but keep in mind that it is dynamic, so it's actually changing in size depending on the currents throughout the ocean. And over time, that is from year to year or decade to decade, its size, its location will change and alter.
Where are the plastics from?
Plastics are from all over. They're from us. As humans, we are having an impact on the globe. So plastics that enter the ocean through any country and through any source are going to actually migrate with those currents. And so plastics in that North Pacific gyre may actually be from all over the world.
So is it sort of waste management in the sense that plastic comes in because of poor waste management, litter on the beach, things coming off boats, people just trash? This is just basically garbage.
The debris can come from a number of different sources. It can come through mismanaged waste, certainly. It can come through accidental entry, that is something that washes overboard on a ship. It can come through just carelessness and improper disposal of waste. But no matter where it originated from, once it gets into the ocean, it's in a dynamic system, and so it's going to move around.
And who does it hurt?
It hurts a number of species. It can hurt wildlife. So that is done through either entanglement. And this is the typical image that we see of the otter or the seabird that has the six-pack ring around its neck. It could be a whale that has a net that's entangled in its flukes. It could be through ingestion into that animal. So this is where they swallow a piece of debris, like a bottle cap or a piece of plastic bagging, and they swallow it. Engages with their gastrointestinal tract or their guts, and it basically can harm them. It has other impacts as well, though. It can actually, if it's sunken down to the sea floor, which is the case for, say, an abandoned or derelict vessel or a net, now it's basically going to abrade or rub against the coral or whatever the seagrass or that bottom substrate is, and it's going to harm in that manner as well.
All right, let me show you this. This, I'm told, are microplastics, and something very common that were one of the bigger problems, or if there is such a thing as a bigger problem, in these garbage patches. How did these, are these created by the sun degrading plastic?
What the creative variety means, and so some of these pieces right here are actually going to be the larger plastics that are breaking down into these smaller fragments through a number of physical factors as well as the sunlight. And so the increase in the amount and the increase in surface area is actually creating another problem, which is it's making more plastic pieces, which now is giving other species an incentive or a false food source, thinking that that is nutritious to them.
All right. Now, it's not just the North Pacific that has this garbage past this jar. There are other parts of the world. Let's see if we can look at some other parts of the world. The Indian Ocean. Here's the Indian Ocean. It has one as well?
Yes, there's five gyres around the world in the various oceans.
What's being done to address these? How can we clean these up?
Well, one of the best things that we can do is prevention, because prevention means that that object, that material, that debris doesn't even get into the ocean system. So prevention is really where we like to focus.
Meaning recycling, you mean prevention, us, I mean humans, is that one of the main ways of prevention?
Absolutely, because one of the things that we need to do is make sure that we are reducing, reusing, and recycling. And the fourth R in those Rs is refusing. So that's declining to use, say, a straw or a stir or a plastic cup, because we've brought the reusable shopping bag or the reusable beverage container with us to that restaurant.
What about cleaning up what's already there? How is that being cleaned up? Because that's a done deal, those gyres.
Some of those cleanup efforts are done on an annual basis. So the NOAA's Marine Debris Program funds an annual cleanup out in the North Hawaiian Islands. Those islands are uninhabited, and yet where we picked up these cigarette lighters and these toothbrushes, there are tons of that type of debris washing up on those beaches on an annual basis.
So what's the solution? I mean, the United States is not the only country that's creating these garbage patches. I mean, the whole world is contributing to these. Is there some worldwide effort if these are growing?
There is a coordinated effort amongst many of the nations that are involved in this problem, which means that we are all working towards trying to reduce the amount of pollution, that is prevention, through better means of managing waste so it doesn't wind up in the ocean. The NOAA Marine Debris Program works with not only other federal agencies, but also with global partners and other non-government organizations to make sure that we can have the maximum impact in trying to prevent waste from going into the ocean.
NOAA is going to get more money and more ability to help clean up the oceans of marine debris in a remarkable effort at political bipartisanship, something we don't often see here in Washington. The Save Our Seas Act will soon be approved by Congress and hopefully signed by the president. Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska is the Republican co-sponsor of the act. I asked him what the act will do and how it managed to get approved. Senator, nice to see you.
Greta, great to see you again. Glad you're here. Thank you. Welcome to my office. And thanks for visiting Alaska so much. I know you're a big fan.
I was just there last weekend. It's a spectacular state. If people haven't seen it, they need to see it.
It is the best.
I want to talk about the legislation, Save Our Seas.
Yes.
You were the initial sponsor
yep.
of it. Tell me, where does that statute or that legislation now stand?
Well, it passed the Senate. It's Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island, and I. We were the two main co-sponsors on it. I have a lot of other co-sponsors. Passed the Senate, and then it just recently passed the House. They added a couple other elements to it, which are fine. So it's now back here in the Senate, and we're hoping to move it soon and get it on the president's desk. Really important piece of legislation that we think is going to benefit our state and the country and, you know, in many ways the world, because it's focused on oceans and ocean pollution and the sustainability of our oceans.
Save Our Seas.
Yes.
Why was this legislation so important?
So here's what it does. We have this big problem, not only in America, but literally all around the world, and it's dealing with ocean pollution, plastics, you know, things that don't biodegrade, and how it hurts the sustainability of our oceans, of our fisheries. And what we thought we needed to do was, A, provide significant funding to NOAA for cleanup throughout the whole country, for states to actually declare ocean debris emergencies. So, for example, when you had the big crisis in Japan, the Fukushima accident there with the nuclear, the tsunami. A lot of what happened in terms of ocean debris washed up on Alaska's shores. Alaska, as you know, is a big state. We have more coastline than the rest of the lower 48 states combined. So a lot of the pollution that comes from Asia ends up on Alaska's shores, but it ends up everywhere. So NOAA would be fully funded to do cleanup. But very importantly, our bill also calls for an international agreement approach to get other countries, particularly in Asia, where the vast majority of the ocean debris comes from, to do more to clean up their ocean pollution that's often pushed into the ocean, comes on America's shores. I've talked to Secretary Pompeo about this. There's a big movement internationally, and America needs to be leading that. And then finally, what was really important about this bill, it wasn't just bipartisan, but as opposed to just saying, hey, we're going to get with the environmental groups to support this, we have many conservation groups that are being helping. We also went to industry and said, look, this is a big problem. You guys can be part of the solution. So we have a bunch of different industry groups that are also willing to help. So it's a good start. We're hoping to get it passed here in the Senate in the next couple of weeks.
Is anybody against it so far? I mean, do you have opponents in the Senate? Is any industry opposed to this?
No, not really. I think, and you see, look on the news, this issue is now everywhere. And I'm glad it is. We've helped in terms of pressing it both internationally and at home. But right now, let me give you an example. The American Chemical Association. We went to them and said, look, this is actually really important. This is not meant to be aggressive towards you. Help us solve this. And oh, by the way, if a chemical company in America finds a way to fully invent a, say, plastic bottle of water that fully biodegrades, because right now plastic doesn't, fully biodegrades, think about what that would do to the health of the oceans. Think about what that might do for the company that invents that. So we want the private sector involved on helping solutions. And right now we have a good bill that's got bipartisan support, industry support, the environmental community is supporting it. So we're feeling pretty strong about this.
This is to clean up. Is there anything in the bill to sort of head it off at the pass so that we aren't dumping more stuff in it? I imagine that you know, the industry that makes plastic, yes, they wouldn't like something like that particularly. But what are we doing to sort of head it off at the pass so that it stops being a problem?
Well, look, you're asking the exact right question. And this is a lot of this is to focus on the cleanup portion. But as I mentioned, the bill calls for, and we've been working with the Trump administration on this, for an agreement with other countries, particularly countries in Asia, China, the Philippines, Thailand, Indonesia. These are countries that account for the vast, vast majority of ocean pollution.
Has that started up the actual conversation with these other nations, since we're all guilty, we're all polluters? But has Japan, have there been conversations?
It is starting up. So, for example, at the G7 summit that Canada just hosted, there was a part of the statement there by the leaders focused on this issue. The Japanese next year are going to be the presidents of the G20. They want to make the cleaning of the oceans, ocean pollution, plastics, a top priority for the G20. So it's definitely happening at the international level. What we're trying to do is push not only the Congress, but the administration to focus on this. And I will tell you, Greta, it's pushing on an open door. When I talked to Secretary Pompeo about this, it was something the State Department is actually very focused on. So we think there's good momentum here, but we think passing the bill, getting on the president's desk, a sign soon, we'll keep that momentum going and put America in a leadership position on this, which we should be.
You know, it's sort of interesting. If you go to a beach, if you see junk, if you go to beaches often, you want beaches cleaned up. So you don't want the oceans to be filthy. If you live the inner part of the country, you might not spend a lot of time at the beaches and see this crisis, but you might learn that there are microplastic pieces in your fish that you're eating on the table.
And that's a huge problem, and we don't even know the extent of that problem right now. But it is a fact that right now the plastics that are in the ocean, they break down, but not fully. And so they don't fully biodegrade, and those microplastics get into the food chain, and we don't really even know how that's impacting us from a health perspective. But from my perspective, it can't be good.
You know, these garbage patches in the Pacific, it's I'm reading about them and thinking, how did we ever let this happen to ourselves?
You know, it's a great question. And I don't know in terms of the background of how it got this bad. The good news is that finally people are waking up to it. And in the Congress, it's bipartisan. And internationally, it's becoming a really important issue. Look, these countries, particularly in Asia, some of them need help. They're growing really fast economically, and their waste systems haven't kept up with that economic growth and population growth. You still have certain countries that don't have, you know, sites where they put their waste. They just plow it into the ocean. And
joining us to discuss plastics in the ocean and what to do about them, Julia Robertson is Vice President of Communications for Ocean Conservancy. Boy, I can't pronounce that. She works closely with their Trash Free Seas program, helping to clean up beaches worldwide. And here to represent the plastics industry is Steve Russell, Vice President of the Plastics Division of American Chemistry Council. Welcome, both of you. Steve, I don't want to hate on plastics because I may not get plastic bags at the grocery store, but I use a toothbrush. I fly on planes. They have plastic. I drive cars. They have plastic. I order from Amazon. Lots of plastic comes in the packaging. So tell me, let's first say, tell me the good about plastic.
Plastic helps save lives. It keeps our food fresh longer, which not only reduces the loss of the energy and the resources that go into making it, but also helps families stretch their resources. But plastic has to be managed. And if we don't, you've seen just now the pictures of what happens when there's not systems in place to let people dispose properly of the materials that they use. And what we're talking about now is creating new business models, new technology and innovation to help solve that problem and to make sure that the things that we have available to us today are available around the world.
Julia, the thing that struck me is that this Save Our Seas Act, and I'm grateful that the Congress is bipartisan, first of all, and it's an effort to clean up the seas. $10 million doesn't seem like a whole lot of money when I see how money is spent and how much things cost. But just to get a sense of, are we today putting more junk into the ocean than we are taking out in cleanup?
Well, what you're getting at is the fact that this is a huge problem. More than 8 million metric tons of plastic is going into the ocean every single year.
Are we taking that much out of the ocean so we're getting ahead of the game or not?
We are taking more out than we have in the past, but we need to do more.
But more than we're putting in on an annual basis.
We are putting more in than we are taking out right now, and that is a problem. But the good news is that we can solve this problem. There is a role for industry, there's a role for governments, and there's a role for an individual consumer to tackle this problem.
What are we doing in the industry side? What kind of innovations are there? I mean, I'd love to have the patent on some biodegradable plastic, if such a thing exists. I'd love to be the first one to come up with that. But what is industry doing?
I'm sorry, Greta, you're not the first. We're working on that.
You're working on that. How far away are you from that?
We can make biodegradable plastics now. I'm dubious, though, that biodegradable plastics are going to be a great solution for the ocean, and here's why. Because at the moment, you can't tell a biodegradable plastic from a non-biodegradable plastic.
Animals can't, certainly.
Right. And so,
but I assume that if everything were now biodegradable plastic, does it mean it may not help today or tomorrow or next year, but eventually down the road,
that's right.
You know, whatever period of 5 years or 10 years, that would be some improvement.
It's a question of transition, and people are working on that. We're working on innovative new materials that allow us to use less plastic to deliver the same benefit and biodegradability. But I think the transition phase is important, and we should not let people think that there's a simple solution that somebody else has control over. We all have to do our part, and that means people making choices to reduce and use less. It means investing on our side, on the industry side, in delivering solutions, and it means engaging governments in making this a priority, which I'm thrilled, and our industry's been really happy to be part of the bipartisan effort to get the Save Our Seas Act.
I'm even struck by when I order something from Amazon, a little tiny item will come in a much too big box, and then to sort of control it in the box, there's all this extra plastic.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, we got to get on Amazon to do that. I mean, it really does mean every industry has to help.
Right.
As well as the consumer.
Right.
So
clearly there's some low-hanging fruit, right? Things that we can all work on and making our voices known that we want to see less packaging or more non-wasteful packaging. But I think we have to also remember that the scale of the problem that we can do something about in North America is only a part of what we can innovate and encourage other parts of the world to have access to the technologies and the resources that we
do. But isn't the thing is that we, in order to lead, I mean, we have to set ourselves out as an example. I mean, we can't impose, you know, our will on other nations if we're unwilling to take the big steps ourselves.
Right. And one of the challenges, I think, is that, you know, the United States does, compared to some of these countries, have good waste management and collection and recycling. And so there is a lot that we can do and should do as individual consumers.
If we're so good at, how can we have this? I mean, a lot of that Pacific is from us. Not all of it, that Pacific gyre, that garbage patch. I mean, if we have such good waste management, how come some, you know?
Well, the oceans are all connected, and so a lot of that is washing up. You know, you heard Sullivan talking about the fact that some of the trash that's in Alaska is coming from different places. And so I think there is an aspect of, you know, some of the items that we see in the United States, like straws, can escape from waste collection systems, and that's why we sometimes see it on the beaches, but it also comes from other places.
I think the research that you cited at the beginning of the show from Professor Jambach about where it's coming from is really instructive because it helps us focus our resources on where they can do the most good the most quickly. And it's not to say that countries that are putting in just a little bit shouldn't aim to do better, but if we really want to impact the volumes going in so that we start putting in less and take out more, then we have to address those parts of the world that just don't have access yet to waste management. And that's what's so exciting about the Save Our Seas Act and directing our government's resources in that direction.
With sufficient money, do we have the ability to clean up the ocean? Do we have the technical ability to do this?
I think we do. I think we have the knowledge and the power and the momentum, most importantly, right now, to make a huge dent in this problem. You know, one
problem
of the
crisis. Is this a crisis or a problem?
I would say it's a crisis. Yeah,
I think
it's
a crisis
that's
too.
That's a good word to use for it. And what we're seeing right now is the fact that, you know, there's momentum from the consumers who are saying, you know, if we've got alternatives to straws and we're available, you know, we're going to use those instead. And governments can do their part.
I don't know why Starbucks can't just put an end today on the straws. I mean, I don't know why they're saying 2020.
Well, I talked to some of our experts, and, you know, there needs to be a plan in place to collect the straws that are currently in circulation, and they're also very challenging, and some municipalities can't recycle those. So they need to have a plan for how they're going to, you know, properly dispose of those
straws.
Steve,
I'll give you the last word.
Thanks for that. So I think we talked about U.S. leadership, and you mentioned a moment ago, and Senator Sullivan spoke to it. I'm actually really enthusiastic that the U.S. State Department has been leading in the intergovernmental forums, the G7, the G20, in APEC. Our government is out there encouraging and bringing resources, and that's something I think we can be proud of.
But I think our government, I think the American people also have to partner with the government and do our share, which is part
yes,
of the problem. Anyway, thank you both very much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
And before we go, an update from last week's program, America's Space Future. Italian researchers detected a lake of liquid water on Mars beneath the planet's southern polar ice cap. Radar pulses sent from the European Space Agency's Mars Express spacecraft indicate a drastic change a mile beneath the planet's surface. The radar indicated a body of water similar to those found beneath Greenland and Antarctica. The next steps, create 3D images of this lake and search for more. That's all the time we have for today. Stay plugged in by liking us on Facebook at Voice America. You can also like my Facebook page at facebook.com/Greta and follow me on Twitter @Greta. Thank you for being plugged in.